about the DNC. You said last night was, using your words, last night was exciting for you. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think so much history unfolded last night in front of us, starting with Joe Biden, who is a remarkable just human being, and I think exemplifies all what's good about people. His family story, of course, and then losing his son, but all of the things that I think he has stood for, and he's been rock solid vice president, but he's been a strong advocate for human rights, and really all of the things that I think we as progressives really believe in. And then, of course, the speech by the president was, I think, one of his finest, how he wove in the past and then moved on to the future. And as I look back, just putting my business hat on for a moment, because I think I've spent most of my career in business. When you think of the economy that he inherited 8 years ago, and we were in the depths of recession, so many people unemployed, and where we are today, it's an incredible accomplishment. And he has, which I can't understand, has not been given anywhere near the credit he deserves for what he did in pulling us out. And at the same time, I think setting an example for all of us about how we treat each other. And I think he and Biden have been an unbelievable team in just setting an example for us. And I think that became somewhat the theme. It certainly was the theme of the First Lady, Michelle, on a Monday night. But with people in these positions, you make incredible decisions, but the impression that you leave on your kids and all children, and what your expectations of how you treat people, and I just think came to me, just hit me right between the eyes last night in terms of how proud we all should be, how much we've accomplished, how much, and stronger together, obviously, is the motto. And I truly believe that. And I think we've done that in Colorado, too. I look back, and we've the lowest unemployment in the country. And at the same time, I think we've done a good job, certainly with LGBT rights and some of the other things. But clearly, and I think that was also the comment, that we've also left a lot of people behind.
Would you talk about the people who were left behind? And in that thought, do you think also that given the support for Bernie Sanders, that the Democratic Party has lost some constituency?
Well, it's been interesting for me. I've had a chance to talk to, and I think Josie and I are probably two of the oldest members of this delegation. And the Bernie supporters tend to be some of the youngest. But I've had some amazing conversations with some of these young people who feel strongly, as we did at their age. I mean, this is not a new thing. I mean, you all tend to obviously have a little different view of the world when you're that age. But we've had some wonderful conversations. And I think for the most part, in fact, just before I came over to talk to you, a young gentleman stopped me and basically said thanks, and I thank them. These were two of the ones last night that, when things got a little tense, stood up and took leadership, and in terms of just trying, I think, to explain some of their counterparts that there was a lot more going on last night than just TPP and some of the other things that they're concerned about. So I'm hoping that with our first woman president's acceptance speech tonight, I'm going to assume that's going to happen. We're going to have to work hard, but to lose to this gentleman is, I use the term loosely, Donald Trump, would be just a travesty, I think, for our country. I think we're all going to pull together, so I have hopes. But again, back to your question, we've left middle-class America behind. In fact, we've eliminated so much of middle-class America, and I think that's the lament of so many people, that the top 1%, you can even say top 1/10 of 1%, have just been given a, I think, disproportionate amount of the success that we've had. And we've got to figure out a way to get more people invested in the future of this country, and I think that's going to be the key. I know that Hillary's going to speak to that tonight. I'm certain of it. I think that will be one of the key things that she talks about. And I think that, frankly, will reach everybody in the party, young and old, Bernie supporters, Hillary supporters. And I think when we walk out of here tonight, we'll come together.
If you were to look back over your career, what are some of your highlighting moments and moments that made you most proud over your entire career?
Well, I had the real opportunity. I think, you know, I served 9 years in the Army, 4 years overseas, lived in a German apartment, saw how the Germans integrated people into their education system. And they did something that I didn't particularly like, because it basically fifth grade, they separated kids that were going to go on to in university and those that were going to go into career and technical education. And then after we moved to Denver, I had the chance to run an international company. And as I got more and more involved in the workforce issues, I think when I ran for governor in 2002, I talked about this a lot. I became convinced that rather than create an either-or, either a four-year college degree or a good technical education, we tended to talk about all or nothing. Four-year college degree or basically forget it. You know, for 4 years I did a career coach program at Manual High School. This is when I owned a machine shop where we hired welders, tool and die makers and so forth. And, you know, when we couldn't hire young people who were educated in this country, it really just highlighted, I think, in my mind, this issue. Rather than give a message that education is for everyone, we gave this either four-year college or nothing, and we tend to talk about that. And we measured schools about how many kids went on four-year colleges. We didn't measure schools on whether they became a plumber or an electrician, or in fact, if anything, we discouraged it. And so I, in my 8 years, I sponsored a number of bills, that concurrent enrollment bills, where kids could stay in school for that fifth and sixth year and basically get their high school degree and an associate's degree without costing them a dime. And in the 4 years I had the career coach program at Manual, we had 250 volunteers that spent every other week an hour with the kids during school, with only one thing in mind, to talk about what opportunities are available in their life, but only if they stayed in school, graduated, and hopefully went beyond high school and got a really a good skill. So I guess one of the things I'm most proud of is how far we've come with that program. We've got 35,000 kids now enrolled in some form of concurrent enrollment. And I see what some of the bills we've passed now, we've basically incentivized companies to put in internship programs, apprenticeship programs, coordinate that. In this respect, this is why one of the things I did like about the German system, that you literally integrated business and careers right into school so that kids would see why it was important to study math, why it was important to have writing and speaking skills, all of those things. So we've come a long way, and I really feel good about what we've done the last 8 years in that. And I think, you know, we've got this huge achievement gap out there. And I'm convinced that if you don't see opportunities, what do? You drop out. So if we can basically do everything we can, and these are some of the things that I feel really good about, to all of us basically go out and create in the kids' minds and help them see the opportunities that are for them, then they're not going to drop out. It's like anything else. If you can see that light at the end of the tunnel, you tend to drive for it. But if you don't ever see the light, you're not going to get there. And so those are the things that I feel probably most proud of.
In that same light, when your education funding bill failed, how do you look back on that?
You know, this is, I think, you know, I ran Proposition 103 in 2011, which basically would have just taken the income tax back and the sales tax back to where it was in 2000 when Governor Owens lowered it. And of course, once you lower it with Tabor, you can't increase it without going back to get a load of the people. I think one of the most frustrating things for me has been our inability to get the average citizen out there to see how critical investing in education is for one of the wealthiest states in the country to basically be funding education at all levels, whether that's preschool all the way up through higher education at one of the lowest levels in the whole country and having some of the highest per capita income of the country, to me is criminal. And I, if I am frustrated about something, it's this. It's our inability to be able to communicate how critical this is to the average person out there. And it's something that I don't understand. We had an initiative we were going to put on the ballot that was just polled that would basically have allowed us to retain the table override funds. And it was decided we just didn't have the ability to get it passed, mostly because of funding. But
also you said, you know, that the communication may not be reaching the voters. Can you talk about that break in communication?
Yeah, the whole issues that we hear, and I think the key question that we haven't come to grips with is, you know, a very, very fundamental one, and that's what's the role of government? And I chaired the Long Range Fiscal Planning Commission back in 2009, actually, after my first year in the Senate. And the whole purpose was to understand and have a fiscal plan for the state. And you can't have a fiscal plan unless you understand what you're doing. I mean, if you got a business, you better agree on what you're going to accomplish. It's no different than in state government. Unless you understand what the role of state government is, you can't really have a funding conversation. And fully in that commission which I chaired, which was 1/4 legislators and of 16 of us, and then 12 people that were selected by the president of the Senate, the speaker, the typical way that you form commissions. But fully 1/4 of that commission felt the only role of government was 1 through 12, not preschool, not higher ed, basically roads and bridges and the judicial system and jails. Nothing else they felt was a role of government. There was no safety net in there, if you notice. There was no health care in there, if you notice. So if that is what people believe, and as these four people said, you know, we don't need to have this conversation. We got enough money to pay for that. I would even disagree at that, because I'm not sure we can even do those three fundamental things right now, because we're certainly not funding roads, and we're certainly not funding mental health, and we're certainly not funding higher education. But if you agree in that limited role, then you have a different conversation. And we have a high portion of the state that believes in is less government, and basically less government, lower taxes. That happens to be the mantra, which means it's very, very difficult to go out and communicate with folks that we need more money, even for something, to me, as basic as education is. And that's the frustration. And no other state has something called the Taxpayer's Bill of Rights. No other state has TABOR. 12 states, including all the surrounding states, have looked at it and all have said, I don't care where you are on the liberal conservative swing, we're not going to do it, whether that's Nebraska, Oklahoma. I mean, we're not going to do a taxpayer's bill of rights, because we understand that basically it takes the ability away to basically run a business, in this particular case, it's state government.
That was probably one of the areas where Colorado was a first, and the rest of the nation was able to observe and say, no, we don't want that. What advice would you give to your successor, given that you have somebody who has been mentoring you for a while as a Democrat? What advice would you give to him, or say the Republican person who might win?
Well, I guess the advice that I would give is clearly, obviously, don't give up. And this is a cliche, but I mean, you know, obviously our future is in our young people, and that's all we've got. I mean, and they're the ones that we're going to look to for leadership and everything else. And if we don't educate them and really give them a chance to do everything they can to develop themselves in the broadest scope as an individual and their leadership skills, I think we're going to do ourselves a huge disservice. So for me, and the reason I decided to run for the Senate at the age of 70 was that I'm just still so committed to education in its broadest sense. I worked hard on the preschool. I mean, if we don't get kids ready to learn by third grade, we know that we are basically sentencing them to a very, very difficult life. We cannot give up on that. I don't think we can give up on, in my mind, career and technical education. It's we need people desperately to do those technical jobs. In this age, it's even more critical to have people that understand technology and can implement it. I think we'll still grow our four-year engineers, but that's not the critical need. The critical need is the people, the technical support that provides them, and that means all of us. We can't give up on that.
So given that you've said your mantra has been don't give up, will we be seeing Raleigh Heath in a high profile from here forward?
Well, certainly not high profile, but I'm
in so many people know you on the street.
No, I'm in hopes that I will be appointed to a board or commission or two, and particularly continue the work that I'm talking about in terms of giving kids the understanding of what's, you know, what opportunities there lie out there, and that's a broad sense. Obviously, I think everybody that can go get a college degree should, but that's really only 25% of the people that have that inclination, and I want to make sure that we give the skills to the other 75% that are critical to this country and critical for them, because, you know, you can. I used to hire machinists and tool and die makers and welders, and these people made very, very decent incomes, but they needed the skills. I guess one of the most poignant days in my life, I had the principal of Manual High School interview all of my machinists and ask them what was the one thing they wished they'd gotten out of high school. And to a person, no matter where they'd gone to school, they said math up to including trig. And I looked at Rick Arthur, who was the principal then at East High School, and I said, who do you put in advanced math courses? He said, well, you know, only those people that are going to go to four-year college. He said, I'm going back and have a new conversation with my math department, because every kid should basically be taking advanced math that is inclined. They need those skills. So
maybe you've already answered this, and I think you have in multiple ways, but I'll go ahead and ask in case you want to add something. What do you want Raleigh Heath's legacy to be?
I would hope that get emotional for a minute.
Okay.
I would hope it would be that every person out there has something they can bring that's unique, and that we provide each of them the opportunity to develop that uniqueness, and that we value what each individual person can bring. And then we do our best to educate them and so that they can fulfill that promise.
Well, hey, thank you for your service and for talking to me today.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Thanks
Good
for asking
to see
me.
You.